One of the courses you teach here is creativity. And since you have an advanced degree, let me say, Dr. Heal Thyself, what is your own creative process? You clearly have done a lot of analysis of the creative process in music generally. How does this piece fit into your process generally, and specifically, what was the genesis of it?
Well, in my creative process, I like to work from the inside out. I like to try to create a small idea rather than imposing a sort of large-scale structure ahead of time, you know, which is a strategy that works for many very well. I will do a lot of things to try to find unexpected results out of myself. And I'll do creative tricks, which
such as
I'll take my instrument, which is classical guitar, and I'll improvise on it. But to make it a trick, I will retune the guitar in particular tunings that I'm not familiar with. I don't know, I've never practiced it, I don't know how to play in. And so the idea is that in normal tuning, you know, I know it well enough that if I put my finger down here and there, I know what notes are going to come out, what sounds are there. But when the guitar is completely retuned, I don't know anymore. And so then I put my fingers down and I start to experiment, and all of a sudden sounds come out that I was not expecting. And so that sort of gets this process going where I'll just listen for, oh, wow, I didn't know that was in there. In a sense, I'm exploring the fingerboard to sort of bring things out that I didn't know that were there. And then I'll come up with lots of sort of ideas from that, that then I look to see, okay, this could fit in the piece here, it could fit there. And it almost becomes a puzzle that I put together. But I have to get the pieces of the puzzle first.
And the music you're playing, because theoretically you could be playing Bach, and if the thing is tuned differently, you're not playing him at all, right?
That's absolutely right. Now, for this particular piece, in this process of retuning my guitar, one of the things I discovered is just how beautiful these what we call alternate tunings are themselves. I would often just sit there and strum them and say, wow, just the open strings make a beautiful sound. So very often I'll use these tunings as chords. And so the third movement, for example, which was the first one that I actually wrote, begins with several alternate guitar tunings. So if you will, Jim, I've taken the string quartet and turned it into my own guitar.
Wow.
But a guitar that doesn't exist, because of course you take, you know, four string instruments and you've got a lot more strings than my six string guitar has. Plus they can do multiple tunings where I can't do that with a single guitar. So the opening of the third movement begins with two alternate guitar tunings stacked on top of each other. One's an open G major, another's an open A major. So half of the violins are doing the one tuning and the viola and the cello are doing the others. And then they slowly trade out and they slide in between those two tunings. So they trade off, and it's as if the guitar, my metaphorical guitar, is retuning itself.
Uh-huh.
So in the ultimate result, it's a process that maybe is so crazy that nobody else would do it, but that's when...
But it's all yours.
I think that's the whole point, is that it's just so silly that then it is mine.
And then in terms of who this was meant for, because the Dover String Quartet are a very good string quartet, but they're a very young string quartet. Mm-hmm. They're all Curtis students, so
yes,
they're as good as they get for their age group. Is that a factor at all when you're writing something like this? I mean, clearly they can play their instruments, but in terms of the emotional content of the piece, do you make a decision as to how deep it can be based on the fact that you're doing it for 420-somethings?
I was totally confident from the beginning with them that anything that I gave to them, they could do technically, artistically, spiritually. That was never a concern of mine. You know, one of the things that I wanted to do with this project was to aim for a large scale, was a 30-minute piece, and that's, you know, by beginning with that large canvas, that's definitely something to consider. You know, how do you hold a piece together for that length and bring an audience along for that ride of that duration? So I think that was more of a consideration. I knew that whatever I did, you know, the Dovers would have no problem with, and that certainly was borne out in the premiere and the subsequent performances. So they've been a dream to work with.
Many composers will compose when they are commissioned to compose, and others will noodle constantly to discover what's inside themselves, mm-hmm. what music they have not yet written.
Yeah.
Do you fit into either of those camps or both?
Well, I'm certainly happy to take commissions if any of your listeners out there are willing to offer. But very often I'll take the advice that I read from Steve Reich once, where he doesn't really take commissions, but he thinks about a project that he would like to do. And then in a sense, he will find somebody that's interested in doing that. When I first read that, I thought, wow, that must be so nice to do that. You know, but then when I thought about it some more, I thought, wow, why can't I try that? I mean, I'm not Steve Reich, that's for sure. But it's been something that I have been able to do over the past years, to sort of think about, okay, I might want to do X, Y, or Z, and then is there somebody interested in that? And that was definitely the case here with the string quartet, where it was something on my bucket list. And it just so happened that I was teaching at Juilliard one day, and I walked into the lobby, and there was Joel Link, the first violinist. And I hadn't actually thought about them because they had graduated from Curtis. They were down at Rice. And so this was kind of a moment of serendipity where I was milling around a string quartet, and then I see Joel, and I'm talking to him about how are you doing. And as I walked away, I thought, wow, you know, it would be wonderful to work with them. And this was also something new for me. A new moment of being middle-aged, which is that now I have the opportunity to write for people that I've taught. You know, up until this point, I've worked with a lot of colleagues and established musicians, and so to work with 20-somethings, this is new, and I'm getting that much closer to my end.
I wanted to ask you about that because your academic history is incredibly varied, and even today you teach here at Curtis, you teach at Juilliard, you teach at Chestnut Hill College, and there must be massive cultural differences. I mean, clearly the subject matter you're teaching at those three schools is widely varied. But culturally, have you got a different hat for each of those schools?
Well, absolutely, because here at Curtis, of course, we're dealing with all essentially college-age students, all very focused on their career paths. At Juilliard, I teach only on Saturdays at the pre-college, so there you're talking about youngsters, and that's obviously a whole different game. And at Chestnut Hill, when I'm only there occasionally, but there very often I work with adults, and so I'm trying to give them exposure, and I try not to do any harm.
Are you still at the point where you're teaching yourself as you teach others, where you're having to analyze what you know yourself in order to be able to communicate it with others, and that's somehow feeding into your own experience?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the keys of being a successful teacher, is to continue being part of the learning process yourself. So I'm always trying to teach new courses, and even within the courses that I do teach, I'm trying to work on new repertoire, so then I'm always taking a fresh perspective, not sort of rehashing the same thing year after year, because certainly that could be a danger of getting stale.
You have in common with Berlioz the guitar and the fact that you are a very expert orchestrator / arranger. You talked about your bucket list earlier. What's the arc of your ambition? Are there symphonies in the future? What's in the future for you as a composer?
Well, all of my projects are collaborations with specific people, like the Dovers. Before this, I wrote a flute concerto for Jeffrey Kaner. So that's probably how I'll continue to go forward, you know, finding other colleagues that are interested in working with me. I would absolutely love to write large-scale symphonic works. That would just be really a matter of opportunity. I don't know if personally I would sit down in isolation and without a particular event in mind and do that. I would probably instead continue working with a specific setup of a performer, an ensemble. That's how I'll continue to go about things.
How did what you heard when they premiered it differ from what you heard in your head, and how has it now evolved in their hands?
Well, I'll even take it before the premiere into our preparation process, and the collaboration was definitely a big key in there. There were certain things that I wanted to try to do that I honestly wasn't completely sure how I was going to notate, and so I went into the rehearsals with the Dovers, and I said, listen, I didn't want to write it down one way or the other, but can you try this? For example, how they do the sliding in the third movement. There are lots of different ways to notate that, but I wanted to first hear them do it and give them different options. And so we tried it out different ways and ultimately found one way that works. Now, of course, retroactively, I'm going to have to figure out the correct way to notate that, which is still puzzling me, honestly. But there are a lot of moments throughout the piece that we're still going to actually tinker a little bit with the piece prior to the concert, maybe change a few tempos. Again, it's a very large-scale piece, so finding the right proportions when you're dealing with a piece of 30 to 32 minutes, you know, you have to get every section to correspond to the next one well.
And just a final question, the fact that these four people were at one time your students, mm-hmm. does that make it much easier than this collaborative process where you can say, I think it needs this, and then they can say, we think it needs this? I mean, how much of an advantage has it been that this is an all Curtis affair?
It's really just been a pleasure, really, to, from my perspective, to see them come here as young musicians, aspiring musicians, and working with them, sensing their talent and seeing how they coalesce together as a group, and now all of their success. And working with them was just absolutely a joy.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.